There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan.
My brother from another mother.
On FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Monday. 251-343-0106 gets you through on a call or a text. 251-343-0106, plus with the FM Talk 106.5 app. You can always leave us one of those talkback messages. You'll see there's a icon. It looks like a microphone on the front page. If you press that, lets you record the message, and then it sends to the station. I can play it back here on the air, so check that out as well. All right, Dad, we continue the discussion this hour with former police chief of the city of Mobile, candidate for sheriff of Mobile County, and man, not new to the chair right here across from me, Paul Prine. Good to see you.
Good to see you, Sean. Thanks for the invite.
Hey, it's good to have you in. I know that it seems like, you know, for all of us, you're like, oh, the primaries are soon. To people running, y'all like keep a calendar? Yeah, I mean, it's countdown time.
Oh, yeah, it is. And we have, I guess, about 9 weeks left, and it seems like a long time, but it's not a long time.
No, time moves fast.
Absolutely.
So you got to canvas, you know, a pretty big county. We're not as big as Baldwin County, but a pretty big county.
Right.
How do you decide? How do you break it down in bite-sized pieces? You just go to talk to any group that's going to have you, like a lunch group, or you've got to set a calendar here. How do you do that?
Well, so we also have the manager reaches out to most of your political groups in every jurisdiction in the county, whether it's Chickasaw, Saraland, Mobile, or even the county like Grand Bay, St. Elmo, or whatever. We get in where we can get in, right? And but you also attend public events. Yesterday over in Sims, and Sims does a great job having the turnout of the people, but they had this Azalea Festival mm-hmm. Center. And there was a lot of people there. So you go to those type of events. You just mingle, shake hands with people. They're not there, per se, to talk about politics, but right. It gives you an idea for those that do want to engage you and give them an opportunity to ask you direct questions.
Do you hear questions? I want to talk about two parts. Questions that you hear over and over and over again, and then questions that you go, I hadn't thought about that. Let's go the over and over and over again. What do you
hear? Yeah, so a lot of times the people will say, when you say over and over and over again, they'll say, well, what are you going to do different? And mm-hmm. that just kind of opens the door to what I would do versus what the incumbent is currently doing or not doing now, right? And then when you talk about the things that we're not doing, some people are engaged, and I've had people to reach out to me about various bills that either have passed in the state house or have not passed, or maybe that are just kind of lingering out there. And I said, okay, well, listen, you asked. I don't know. Let me go and take a look at it. But I love that type of engagement because I think most politicians really just want to meet you for a few minutes, smile, shake your hands, kiss your kid, and hope that you vote for them. But I think it gives me an opportunity to tell people exactly where I stand for those that really are engaged in politics.
You know, you mentioned bills in Montgomery, and somebody who has your career, the decades and decades and decades in law enforcement.
Right.
You know the law enforcement, but the job of sheriff is one of law enforcement. At the same time, I do want a sheriff who comments on bills in Montgomery because it's one of 67 in the county. I mean, one of 67 positions in the state.
Right.
And it's a political position.
Well, it is a political position, and so as the top law enforcement executive in any county within the state of Alabama, you kind of want to know where they stand, especially if it's regarding enhancements of criminal justice bills or public safety, et cetera. I've had a lot of people ask me about the whole Moss thing, whether or mm-hmm. not, you know, Big Creek Lake should have been shut down, what role the sheriff plays in it, and those lines really do get blurred between criminal.
Yeah.
And what's civil.
Right, because in the position, all your time in law enforcement, even as chief of police, you wouldn't probably be asked questions about, like, Big Creek Lake. But as a sheriff, that's something that people think,
and let me just say this, and the reason that is the case is because unlike chiefs of police, which are appointed positions in the state of Alabama, probably should need to be a consideration for elected police chiefs, right? But as the sheriff, that is a constitutional mandate. There are a lot of political positions that serve throughout the state that are not political mandates, but right. The Mobile County Sheriff, the sheriff in any county in the state of Alabama is, and they have a lot of power that they can wield for either good, bad, for personal reasons or political reasons, and you want to make sure that you've got the right person in place that's going to use that authority the way it should be for the people.
I want to get into all those parts of it, but we'll start off with, I don't even have to open the text line. It'll be public safety,
yeah.
Crime. I mean, I talked to you, police chief, about the same things. So Lay out the county here. Where do we stand? What do you think the biggest problem right now is?
So for me, the biggest problem that we're facing right now is, where is crime in Mobile County? And we're not just talking about the unincorporated areas. We're also talking about collectively with every jurisdiction in the county, right? So if you look at the county versus the city of Mobile, the Mobile Police Department would have just what is respective to the city of Mobile Police Department or its jurisdiction. We need to be able to see what a crime report looks like, not only for the unincorporated areas, but collectively working with all the agencies in the county to collect all this data so we can show a big macro snapshot of really what public safety looks like in Mobile County. I think that's a huge deal. And I believe that we still see the violent crime happening with the youth in our community, and we've got to be able to fix that. There's no one solution that's going to fix it, but I am an advocate of trying to explore new ideas to be able to address the systemic problem that we have. And it's not only here in the county of Mobile, but it permeates throughout the state and certainly throughout our country. Mm-hmm. I know with the city of Mobile, unfortunately, we've done the same things, just used different people, different nonprofits for 30 years, but we never really measured how successful it was. And it almost makes me, I'll tell you, it does make me question whether or not we're being serious about public safety and protecting majority of the citizens who are law-abiding citizens that do want law and order.
This will be good. Give me your law enforcement education view on this. Because I was downtown on Jocaine Day. Let's talk about this. And I was there. I wasn't there at 11 o'clock, but you couldn't have fit a dang playing card between a deputy or a police officer.
Right.
I mean, they were everywhere. And for people to say, people were criticizing and said, that happened because law enforcement wasn't there. This is anecdotal for me, but dang it, law enforcement was everywhere, and still some dirtbag wants to go shoot it out.
Well, if you'll remember, Darren, when I was the chief for the city of Mobile during New Year's Eve, we had literally the last homicide that we had was within about 40 or 50 feet from about 10 police officers that were there. You can never stop the crime of homicide per se, or even violent assaults, if somebody's intent on harming another person, and they're going to carry that out irrespective of who's around. But we're not talking about isolated incidences. We're talking about systemic problems. And I know homicides can be systemic, but we're talking about the violent crime as a whole that affects really the average everyday citizens. And while we don't necessarily see that here in Mobile County, even one homicide is too much. So how do we affect that? And we've got to find a way as government, and you know how challenging that is, mm-hmm. right, as a constitutionalist, that, the separation of powers there. Government, especially law enforcement, cannot get into the homes, but for all the reasons you talk about all the time, fathers not being in the home, and certainly government can't get into the homes.
Yeah, they can't make them be in the homes, but
you can't make them, but it gets back to this idea, then how do we address it? And I've always been a pro-advocate of working with the school systems, in the school systems, trying to direct and change the lifestyles of some of these children. And coming from a background of poverty, I can certainly tell you that what got me out of that was certainly a successful life and prosperity. Prosperity brings people out of their conditions. Now, you're not going to be able to save every child, but I think that we could do far more better than what we've been doing over the last 30 years here in this city and county.
And we got to do something, because I fully support law enforcement.
Right.
I fully support using laws and prosecution and putting those people not just in jail, y'all, put them in prison.
Right.
And they stay there. But we got to do something on the other end, because we have been, I mean, look at our numbers of people in prison in Alabama. We got plenty.
Yeah.
And still there's a new crop of people that want to do the same crap as before.
Well, so you have generational criminals, right, coming through society, if you will. And so that's why law enforcement, in my opinion, has to start. It used to be the middle schools. We really need to be in the elementary schools. But we've also got to work with the prosecutor's office, the state, at the state level, to make sure it trickles down to every prosecutor's office. We have to definitely work with the judicial system and figure out what laws have to be amended or changed, such as Anaya's law, mm-hmm. that allows these judges to lock them, you know, some of the bad, of the bad locked up. And we've got to do that. We could talk about Metro Jail and how it's consistently overcrowded.
Yeah,
and so what
over,
do we need to do to do that? Do we need to open up a tent city? We've got to start taking some drastic measures to affect and direct where people go and if they're going to get into a lifestyle of crime. Are we going to push them into the workforce and mandate them to go in there, maybe through the judicial system? Maybe that's the way to change it. But we have got to have new ideas and new challenges for a new today. And the same old thing is not working. And to continue to do that is absurd to me.
You know, you and so many others have said that. And once again, I want y'all to listen to what he said. Not middle school may be too late.
Sure.
It may be. Because the idea, you know, when I first started focused on this, I was so naive. I said, well, you're going to talk to these guys that are 17, 18 years old.
Yeah.
Dude, that's too late sometimes.
Well, listen, I've always said that the school system knows better where these kids are going to end up in life, right? By eighth or ninth grade, we know if they're prepared for the military, if they're prepared for college. Most of them are not. But if they are not, I think it is our responsibility to ensure these children have a way of life out of their poverty and start forcing them into this workforce development. And I know when I say that, some people going to say, oh my God, that's not American. But here's the thing, we still have to live with the effects of crime, especially violent crime. So I do think that when it comes to the broader general sense of the population, that I think government does have a responsibility to ensure that these children have an opportunity to succeed.
Coming right back, more with Paul Bryan right here on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 122, FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Our guest, former police chief, city of Mobile, candidate for sheriff here in Mobile County, Paul Bryan. We talked about this during the break, and I wasn't on the list, but that's how this show works. We can go different ways. Talk about the responsibility of the media. You know, we're talking just during the news break. Responsibility of media and the way they report crime. I think this is an interesting discussion.
Right. And so the responsibility, to me, the media is the biggest stakeholders in any community, right? And they'll tell you, well, we have to report it. The people deserve to know. And while I agree with that, you take the city of Mobile, you have what the crime data looks like. And if you compare us to Montgomery or comparable cities like Jackson, our crime rate is half, but it still needs to come down. We could do a lot better. But the problem is you not only have what the real data looks like, right, but you also have what the perception of crime looks like. And with the perception, the media plays a big role in that and how they twist and turn some of these narratives. And it's one thing to report the violent crime, but it's also something altogether different when you say, okay, well, we're going to run this story five times today and do it for the next 5 days mm-hmm. on top of everything else that comes out, right? And then now with the onset of social media and everybody's got an opinion now and nobody really has all the facts. They just run with how they feel about a thing. Well, then, you know, when we start calling ourselves Mob Town, well, we've given ourselves that moniker.
Yeah.
And what do you do to change that? The media has to be the biggest stakeholder. And I think that lends itself to the economic growth and how good, bad, or mediocrity that the economic development and growth is going to be and whether or not people want to move to Mobile or Mobile County to invest in its economy. And I think that's a big deal.
There's a breakdown somewhere in this. And we're talking about the jobs thing, but to have like Chamber of Commerce come and say, we remember one time Bradley Byrne was like, well, we got to bring people in from or Mississippi or Florida or something to take these jobs. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me because we got all these people that don't have a job here. Can't we put our people in those jobs? He said, we're having trouble doing it.
I think we're woefully behind on the workforce development program. Baldwin County is ahead of the curve with that whole brand big huge facility they've got. We are behind the curve here in Mobile, and while we want Baldwin County to grow, the city of Mobile is, and the county of Mobile affects this entire region. Mm-hmm. It may not be as big as some people think it is, but it really is the big show in town. And so I just happen to think that if we would educate our children, we would not only feed the workforce and backfill those jobs, those skilled trades here in Mobile, good paying jobs, but we would also reduce the crime as well.
You talk about the jail. We mentioned that, too, and the overcrowding there. What do you think? What would you, if you were elected sheriff, change with that? I mean, you talked about expansion. You talk about this often gets to be discussed of mental health issues and right. people in the jail. Like, what's your idea?
So that's going to be a bigger issue. You're going to have to work with the county commission. You're going to have to work with state and federal legislators. If we don't do something to alleviate the crowding and move people through that jail and get them out of that jail, you're going to have to either – one of two things. You're going to either have to expand the jail, and right now during the mayor's race, there was a lot of talk about whether or not we're going to build the metro jail in another location, mm-hmm. I guess, for port development. Mm-hmm. And so that has to be taken into consideration and do the expansions, maybe even implement some tent cities. I don't know. Or we need to look at maybe the short-term goal, which we did in COVID, and we had to work with the state attorney general's office to be able to get some of these in custody arrests transferred out to what's called a ticketable offense or a summons, like maybe drinking in public if you're not impaired or whatever. Do we really need to take a person into custody for that when we could just write them a summons and have them to come to court, much like a traffic ticket? There's a lot of small nuances that we can do like that, but it doesn't appear that we're doing anything right now. And you're going to have to alleviate that overcrowding. It lends itself to assaults within the jail. It lends itself to, unfortunately, death investigations where, you know, now we're pointing fingers at the staff of the jail or even the sheriff himself. And that may not be the case. It could just be a situation of circumstances. But I do think it is the leader's responsibility to tackle that problem head on. And we need to do it now, not tomorrow.
Yeah, I was wondering, and I don't know as a percentage, and if you ever had that data, how many people would be in jail for those, what you're saying, those ticketable offenses? Like, where somebody is not a, they didn't do something violent, they're not a threat, you know. It was them drinking in public. They're doing that to themselves. They didn't go.
Right. There's not per se a victim.
Yeah.
And they're nonviolent.
Society's the
right?
victim.
So
or
you could say that about a lot of various crimes. I wouldn't have the data. That's something that's going to be internal to the sheriff.
I wonder how
department.
Many of those are in there.
You also have to understand those that serve misdemeanor sentences less than a year, they're going to serve those out. If it's 3 months, 6 months, 10 months, they're going to serve those out at Metro
jail.
And then you're going to have people in there that, for whatever reason, can't get a bond for a host of different reasons. And then you've got people that are just matriculating in and out. They get arrested, they get a bond, and they get out. And the internal processes we don't have access to. But I do think that we can alleviate the overcrowding either by expansion or trying to entertain some of the options we just talked about.
All right. This one has caused expansion at some jails around our area. And we'll probably just get this started and finish it after the news. Squirrel Vereen says, how does Paul Prine feel about continuing the partnership with federal agencies to crack down on illegal immigration and gangs from south of the border?
Well, we didn't per se have the problem or there wasn't a push for illegal immigration or the roundups that we see today. Listen, I am a constitutionalist and nobody worked better with the federal partners than I did. That was part of the reason we had a 65% reduction in homicides is because we targeted gangbangers and associates of these criminal elements here, specifically in the city of Mobile. But, you know, that is a constitutional mandate that the government has. And I don't believe in activism from the sheriff's seat, the chief's seat, or any of these other political positions. If the government comes in and says we have to do these roundups, the only thing I've ever argued is let's make sure that we have a solid plan to go out in the community and round up the people that shouldn't be here and make sure we do it in a way where we don't become a national spectacle of the entire country.
And that's we're up against a break, but when we come back, tell me how do you do that?
Sure. Absolutely.
All right. Continue our questions here for the candidate for sheriff of Mobile County, Paul Prine, 251-343-0106. And then somebody chimed in. All drunks are potentially violent. Listen, you could answer. I would say I disagree.
Well, we didn't say anything about drunks. I said barring anybody being drunk.
Right.
I said, but sometimes somebody can take a beer, get out of the car, and be arrested. That has absolutely happened, and that doesn't necessarily mean they're in danger to themselves or to society.
Coming right back.
Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Monday. 251-343-0106. 251-343-0106. Get through on the text line or the phone line. Continue our conversation. Candidate for Mobile County Sheriff, Paul Prine, who is, we're 9 weeks out.
About 9 weeks out.
And all y'all that thought, like, it's going to be, primary is going to be down the road. It's the reason we had the probate judge and all these people in, because it's coming very, very fast.
That's right.
Let's talk about, this is a subject you and I talked about when you were police chief, and that is body camera footage. And so should body camera footage, say you're elected sheriff, that would you have a system where you'd have body camera footage? Would you release it to the public? When? That kind of stuff.
Yeah, so contrary to maybe what a lot of deputies would say they wanted, I think Mobile County Sheriff's Office is one of the last in the state that does not have body-worn cameras, and I think that's disingenuous in my opinion. I believe in transparency. Transparency of government lends itself to people trusting the government. Now, laws have been placed in effect for a reason, where you can't release body-worn cameras on significant incidences like death investigations. And there's a reason for that, right? Because where those things are bad and the public wants to know, there are lawyers out there circling the trough, so to speak, because it becomes a money grab. And I hate to say that, but it does become a money grab with a lot of these out-of-state plaintiff attorneys that come into town and manipulate and twist. And all they're coming to do is pillage and rape the coffers of resources and money from government. That's all they're planning on doing. Doesn't mean that the person that lost their life's not going to get justice, but at the end of the day, that's just kind of my opinion on it. But I do think that we need to be a little bit more transparent with how that works, because there gets a lot of complaints. We get a lot of complaints from people in the field, but one thing I can tell you, having been at Mobile, that the majority of the citizen complaints against officers for the demeanor went down about 95%, and that means that the citizens knew the camera was on, and so those complaints dropped off. But what it did give us an opportunity to review was that some of the procedural problems were going through the roof and that officers wasn't necessarily following procedures. Now, that was years ago when Mobile went to body-worn cameras. But what that does is gives us an opportunity as an executive law enforcement leader to say, hey, this guy or gal didn't do the right things. They lost these people's property for whatever reason. They didn't follow the protocol. And it's not always punitive. Sometimes it just needs that these officers need to get some remedial training where it becomes a secondary motor skill for them to be able to follow those procedures to do the right thing by the people.
So you did use that as like a training tool?
Absolutely, yeah. Now, I was one of the few chiefs. Now, some of the chiefs before me, I think, were a little heavy-handed with it, but I did use it as an opportunity to give officers remedial training for some of those procedural violations that they were committing, and it did get better.
All right, from the text line here, well, this somebody gave themselves a new nickname. I like it. El Kabong. Those of us remember that from cartoon days. He says, how's Mr. Prine feel about the school resource officer program? First of all, there's multiple questions. So first of all, how do you feel about that program?
Well, I like the idea of the program. I don't know much about it. The talks were beginning when I was the police chief, and then, of course, it was implemented after I had left office, now going on 2 years. But I do like it. But my understanding is we're still adequately below where we need to be. And what I mean by that is my understanding is that some of the resource officers are pulling double duties at multiple schools to the extent, I believe, it was the Williamson High School shooting where the resource officer had just left within minutes of that incident happening here a few months back. And I think that's disingenuous. If we're going to commit to it as a whole. And I think you and I were talking about commitments as a whole from government, right? Mm-hmm. Don't just put something in the place that looks good. Now, that's my understanding. But if that is the case, I do think we need to look at the resources and money and how do we equip every school with a resource officer, because I do think that's important to protect our children.
Yeah, so that would be a county commission thing for them.
Sure.
Coming up with the money. The plan as it is now, do you like that where you have, I'll tell you what I think in a second, but where you have the sheriff's department is responsible for the training and the certification and all that for the deputy. Right. And then the school system paying for that person's time, but they're not directly working for the school system.
Right. So I don't have the nuances of how the budget works. I do know that the county commission upfronts the money to the sheriff's department, and then the school system apparently reimburses the county commission for the expense. But a lot of those resource officers are already trained police officers per se. You just need to make sure you're getting adequate training to how they're supposed to conduct themselves and the procedures that affect children, because sometimes the laws and how you can treat children and the things that you do are a little bit different that protects children, and you need to make sure, and I'm sure that's being done, but I'm a big advocate of having resource officers in schools.
Yeah, I don't see how this has been not done beforehand, because I can make the argument I make in the past where I'm like, well, I tell you what, you put what's more important, your children or your money? Well, my children. Well, there's an armed officer at the bank, and there's not where your child is. So.
Right. Well, I think that's where leadership comes into place. We're having been able to look down the road and foretell some of the problems we're seeing. So if you know that crime is on the rise and we're starting to have more incidences with youth violence and certainly with the children in school, I think that's where leadership matters, is, hey, we need get on top of this now and not be reactive. And unfortunately, every level of government, as you know, is very reactive versus being proactive, because it costs money to do things, and trying to sell some of those things can be a little hard sell for the community unless you have a critical incident, God forbid a shooting in a school, and then all of a sudden everybody's willing to give the money to put the resource officers in the
schools.
Once
bad things happened.
Right.
I could sell it right now to y'all as people of Mobile County to tell the commission we want the money to go to make sure there's an armed officer at every school.
Well, you also have to remember this, though. We're woefully behind on where we need deputies in the field. And so there has to be an operational plan that works between the officers in the field, the deputies in the field, and then the school resource officers, and making sure that you got a solid plan that when there's a critical incident, you're not just having a resource officer deal with that situation in a silo or in a separate vacuum, if you will. Now you've got an operation of deputies that's responding to that school regardless of how
they press a button and then these things happen.
That's exactly right, and I don't know that there's an operational plan in place for that.
You're talking about funding, so do you think the sheriff's office is being properly funded by a county commission?
Well, I don't know. That's a great question. I can tell you prior to 2023, every sheriff has ran the sheriff's office and the Metro Jail under $57 million. That's a matter of public record. We cannot see the sheriff's budget. In 2023, something changed with the county commission where now they just lump everything under public safety. And so we don't really know how much goes to the sheriff's office, because now they'll put things like the courts, like Strickland Youth Center or court police, and they just call it public safety. But we do know that the sheriff has been over budget for the last four fiscal years, to the extent that the 2026 fiscal year, that the county commission thought it was important to put a rule change in the budget saying that if you go over, you need to be able to hire or you blow your overtime budget. And that should be concerning for all of us as a citizen, that now you've got to go, doesn't matter what elected position you are, you've got to go and sit with the finance director with the county commission to justify the expense. And I think that's telling in and of itself, and maybe we'll get a chance to talk about maybe my three-step plan when I become the sheriff.
Okay, yeah, we'll do one quick question here, and then we'll get to that. From Scott, how does Mr. Prine, what's his take on permitless carry in the state of Alabama?
I am a constitutionalist, and I do not believe that we should have permits. The permit issue, in my opinion, and don't get it wrong, there'll be people say, oh, he's not into sensible gun ownership. Yes, I am. But I am an advocate of holding criminals accountable and not the average law-abiding citizen. And the reality of it is the permit money, in my opinion, has always been about money. Incidentally, the Democratic Party in the State House in Alabama has put up a kind of a revised version of the old permit law. And it kind of makes me wonder, maybe it's not going anywhere, but why the Alabama Sheriff's Association or even the local sheriff has not spoke out against that. And I'm not saying that they're supporting it. What I'm saying, though, is I am a constitutionalist. And before you call me a racist, just understand there's constitution, law, and precedence. And sometimes precedence and law conflicts with the Constitution. But unless it's challenged in court, everybody goes by the law when it's the Constitution that we should be holding the standard to.
All right. Let's see here. I tell you what, you said you three-step plan. So let's talk
about that. So I'll tell you this. Number one, you know, a lot of people say, well, Paul, why are you running for sheriff? You know, I've heard even the sheriff say, well, if it's not broken, don't fix it. Well, at the end of the day, it is broken. We don't know, right? So let me tell you this. This race today for Mobile County Sheriff comes down essentially to two things. The status quo. That means it's the same as it's going to be. It's going to always be that way. I just like the guy. It doesn't matter. But we now know that Sandy Stimson and the machine is behind Birch. They have raised a lot of money for him, and that's fine. Or you can go with a reformer, somebody that's got proven results. And we can talk about 65% reduction in homicides, 48% reduction in personnel or attrition. And that was under my leadership for 2.5 years. The second part of that is trust and transparency, right? I've told you transparency lends itself to trust, and nobody did that more than I did to the extent that it cost me an early retirement and it cost me money out of my pocket to stand up and do the right things when I was asked to be doing things that were unethical and even criminal. And if I would fight up for myself, I would certainly fight for you in a world where nobody is standing for being fear of being ostracized by the power base or the power group that runs the money, power, and influence. And I think that's a big deal. I ran a $75 million a year budget with 750 employees, and not once did I blow the budget the three fiscal years that I was the chief. And we reduced crime by double digits all three respective years. And then the third thing is that if we really want the community to see, feel, and touch what we're doing in the way of making them safe, we have got to take care of our correction officers and our deputies to ensure that they not only have adequate compensation and resources, however, that they really understand that, hey, the sheriff is the one that's going to get behind me because they're doing the work. It's not the sheriff, it's not the chief, and it's not their staff. The men and women at the bottom of the token pole, so to speak, are the ones doing the work, and they've got to believe in the mission, understand the mission, and understand where they're going in order to be effective.
All right, coming right back. More with Paul Pryde next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 150, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have y'all along. 251-343-0106. Check in with the professor, my buddy Ron at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Somebody asked me the other day, when I got off the air, Ron, they said, he's really a professor? I said, well, in the real world, he is a professor. He knows about all the stuff I want to know about for precious metals. So, yes, Professor Ron, good to talk to you.
It's Anna.
It's Adjunct Professor Anna. They switched on me. Adjunct Professor Anna. Let's talk about this today. Gold and silver prices as we get started. What are we doing here on a Monday?
Well, the prices are down right now. Mm-hmm. So this is actually, it looks like it's on the downtrend. It is trying to climb back up. It's going back up to 70, but it was down in the 60s this afternoon. So this was a good time to come in and buy some silver or gold, you know, depending what your needs are and what your budget is. But we have plenty of gold and silver available here for stacking or collectible coins.
Yeah, and Ron had told me before, too, that some of the flow in the prices are these big institutions have certain sell numbers, like the gold's going to hit a certain price or silver's going to hit, and they sell out and put back into the market that silver, and then it picks back up. Are you seeing that like kind of dip and then it goes back up? You see these waves?
Yes. Yeah. So it's basically a wave trend. It's supposed to be kind of like up and down. And, you know, typically we don't see a large margin. It's only a few bucks here and there. On gold, it could be about $100 difference. On silver, it's typically about $5 difference, you know, going up and down. But the way the trend has been, it's been, you know, $500 in gold and like $20 to $30 in silver recently. So it's been up and down.
Okay. Tell folks how to come in and take advantage of the dip and do some buying.
We're at 2204 Government Street in Midtown Mobile. They can also find us on Facebook or on our website, mobilebaycoins.com, or they can give us a call and talk to me personally. Phone number is 251-725-1590. Thank you.
Hey, thanks, Anna. There goes Anna at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. A few more minutes left with Paul Pryde running for Mobile County Sheriff. This from the text line said, Paul Prine opposed permitless carry and spoke out against it as police chief. What has changed?
I've never spoke out against it. I'd like to see where I spoke out against it. As an appointed position, I did not speak in favor of the bill that struck down the pistol permit law. But you have to understand the difference is now I am not under an appointed position, and appointed positions, they're only as strong or as weak as the leader you serve under. And so you have to be very careful that you don't oppose directly who your boss is. In my case, would have been the mayor. And sometimes in those situations, they don't want you to say anything, even if you want to. That's the difference between.
That's why this is. Yeah, this is the only out of right. all the law enforcement positions all across the fruited plain.
That's right.
Sheriffs are the different. They're yes, the sir, constitutional. Right.
Well, it's a constitutional position, and so at the end of the day, the sheriff is directly responsible to the people. But I do think that in saying that, if you really want to know the kind of person I am, go back and read all that with me in the city to the extent that I pushed back against an administration that was asking me to do things criminal and unethical, and I fought against it even to my own detriment that cost me an early retirement, and that tells you the kind of person that I am.
Where's that stand right now?
Well, there's litigation with the city, and I'll just make it clear for everybody. I'm not suing the city of Mobile. Everybody, and it almost kind of makes me think that there's an underground push for people to say that. Because, oh, how do you work with the city? No, there are individuals that did a thing that defamed me, both written and verbal. And where else do we seek remedy but through the courts? I believe in the court system. I believe the court system will play this thing out, and it's going to play out the way ever it's supposed to play out. But at the end of the day, only innocent men try to prove their innocence. And I worked very hard for 30 years, getting 6 years of college education, doing all the right things, taking the lumps and bumps, crawling through the ranks of the police department, only for my career to be derailed the way it was and what I essentially call dirty politics. That's why I'm fighting for people, if you just really simply want to water it down and find out I'm fighting for the average everyday citizen, not for the country club, not for the people that wield the wealth and power in this town. The average everyday people that need help, and that's what I'm fighting for, to serve and protect.
All right. Gosh, I'm about run out of time. Well, quick one here. How do you see the drug situation, fentanyl in our city, the border policy, like your take on that?
Well, fentanyl's a bad drug. It's super, super dangerous. It has killed a lot of people right here at home at our doorstep. And I think we need a more concerted effort to work not only with the state partners from the local level, but also with our federal partners. I don't believe there's been enough emphasis that's been put on the fentanyl traffic. It's not only coming from across the border, but primarily from China, and it's coming through the mail. And we don't do a lot to work with the postal services and UPS. There's all types of drugs coming through, but there's just not adequate personnel to really affect and tackle that problem. And
how would you tackle it?
Well, I told you earlier, I think there's about 160, 170 deputies with the Mobile County Sheriff's Department. And I believe we're woefully understaffed. I believe that's given with the amount of money we spend in overtime that we've seen over the last few years with certain deputies that's been prosecuted. If we have that kind of money, I think we need to backfill some of those positions till around 50 more deputies, and then have a special units team that would go out, work with narcotics, and tackle a lot of these problems. A lot of these drugs, whether it's fentanyl or whatever, they're coming through the mail. And it's the same way with marijuana, whether you want it legal or not. Right now, it's illegal. And a lot of this, these traffickers, they go to Colorado and some of these places where it's legal, and they're mailing 40, 50, 100 pounds of weed back to our community. The same thing is being done with fentanyl. And I think until we get serious about reducing the crime and reducing those drug flows coming through. I'm real big on narcotics. I did about 11 and a half years total with the Mobile Police Department working in narcotics, and it's a bigger problem than most people think.
All right, as we wrap up here, if you're elected, what's up? Something we could look at, a measurable goal that you'll promise the voters in your first year?
The measurable goal would be this: transparency with the budget. We're told it's somewhere around $75 million. You will know where your money's going, and then transparency with the crime data. I would have to go back, pull the data to find out where we're at from when I took office, but I can assure you that you would see a significant reduction in the county jurisdictions at the end of my first year term. And while we should be helping some of these other jurisdictions. I think we spend too much time in Pritchard and maybe Sims and some of these other jurisdictions. We should be able to help them. But when their taxpayers are paying for their police departments, we should be able to help get them up and running, but not spend all of our resources in other jurisdictions when we're abdicating our responsibility in the county areas such as Chinchula, Wilmer, Codian, St. Elmo, and some of these other places that have a lot of drug problems.
Yeah, but I've run out of time, but you do, you're the sheriff for the entire county, and if somebody in Pritchard feels unsafe in their home, they shouldn't have to live like that.
Well, they shouldn't have to live like that. However, the sheriff should also be working with the mayor to ensure what do we need to do to get this police department up and running, where it's hitting on all cylinders, to make sure that they are getting their money's worth out of the taxes rather than just having the sheriff go in and do all the work for them.
All right. More information on your campaign. Where do they go?
Yeah, please go to Facebook, Prime for Sheriff, also YouTube at Prime Time Podcast.
All right. Good stuff. Good to see you.
Thanks, Sean.